The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Well, welcome, family, to a brand new show, a brand new workshop, if you will, Walking Through the Language of the Heart. We are so glad you've joined us, and it has been a while since my co-host and I have done a show, a series of shows that we have put together as recovery workshops for you. You may remember him from Walking Through the Big Book and Walking Through the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Now we are presenting for you Walking Through the Language of the Heart. Joining me on this first episode is our friend Chris S. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Monty. You know, it's been probably 11 years or something. It's really, really cool to be back doing something with you.
Yeah, yeah. It has been. I can't believe how much time has gone by. It's been a heck of a journey. And to know that you're still doing the thing and I'm still doing the thing and we can come back together and do the thing together once again, well, that is just an awesome thing, and I so appreciate it. Now, you are you live exactly where?
I'm in Blairstown, New Jersey, which is up by the Delaware Water Gap, if you know anything about New Jersey.
Okay, so you're in New Jersey. I'm in Albany, Oregon. And the beautiful thing about technology is we can really use it to benefit the cause of carrying the message. And here we are again doing the same thing. Tell the listeners a little bit about Chris S. before we actually start on this broadcast.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm in long-term recovery. I've paid a lot of attention to things like addictive illness treatment, recovery. It's played a huge role in my life. In the late 80s, I was dying of alcoholism, and I got exposed to some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about in the coming weeks, and it was transformational and life-saving. And so So I've been a huge fan and a huge proponent of a lot of the things that Bill Wilson teaches. And I want to also say another thing. You know, Monty, you've been doing recovery media, you know, webcasts for a long time now. I mean, you know, what, 17, 18 years?
18 years, yeah.
And you've really hung in there, and you've been putting out a consistent product for a long period of time. And, you know, I want to commend you on that. You know, some of us try to do the best we can to carry the message to people that are still suffering from alcoholism or drug addiction. And I really respect the people that play their part in that.
Well, thank you, brother. Thank you. That means a great, great deal. And in turn, I want to thank you too for all the work you do. And of course, all of you who are listening, because without the listening audience, we're just talking to ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are we going to be offering the listeners on this workshop that we're doing, Walking Through the Language of the Heart?
All right. Well, you know, the book was compiled around 1988. And for a long time, you had to track down the old issues of the Grapevine to find some of these writings of some of these, really, some of them are historical. Certainly, they're all deeply spiritual. And so the Grapevine put them together in this volume. And the volume we're going to be talking about is The Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings. And how I think we're going to do it, God has a way of changing people's plans. But,
sure.
But what I thought we would do is I thought we'd take one, maybe two of these articles a week and read them, you know, maybe break them down, maybe share from our own personal experience what they mean to us, some of the lessons that we've learned and things that we've noticed over the years that have to do with the article that we're reading, and just kind of talk about it and maybe bring it a little bit to life.
Yeah. Well, that sounds excellent. Yeah, let's do it, brother.
All right, so what I think we'll do is I think we'll start on the introduction. And again, this was compiled in 1988, so that's probably when this introduction was written. And I will read it, and we can talk about it after I'm done.
Okay.
A publication of The Language of the Heart brings together for the first time virtually every article written for the AA Grapevine by Bill W., co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are several of his articles are available in reprint, though several of his articles are available in reprint form, whether as pamphlets, AA books, or later issues of the magazine, they've never before been published in one volume. In June 1944, the Grapevine was established as a local newsletter through the individual efforts of six New York City AAs who were concerned about what seemed to be a lack of understanding among groups in the metropolitan area. Mailed by the six editors to all known groups in the U.S. and Canada and sent free to AA in the World War II armed forces, the Grapevine soon caught on nationally. In 1945, by vote of the groups, it became the principal journal of the fellowship as a whole, and since the January 1949 issue, it has been known as the International Journal of Alcoholics Anonymous. From the first issue of the 8-page newsletter, Bill W. was a prolific contributor, an enthusiastic advocate, and for many years, a consulting editor. In spite of a grueling travel schedule and a copious correspondence, Bill could never find enough time to respond to all the many and varied demands of a fellowship that was still in the process of formation. And in the Grapevine, he discovered an ideal vehicle of communication with the members and groups who clamored for his insights and experience. In more than 150 articles written over a span of 26 years, Bill documented the painstaking process of trial and error that resulted in AA's spiritual principles of recovery, unity, and service, and articulated his vision of what the fellowship could become. When the current Grapevine editors began to consider ways of grouping Bill's articles in logical segments, it seemed at first a Herculean task, yet in the end it was not, largely because of Bill's only highly focused way of thinking and working. The articles virtually fell into place. They are arranged chronologically in three parts according to the primary AA concerns Bill was thinking and writing about during each period of time. They are further subdivided by major and minor subject matter within each part. Brief introductions to part 1, 2, and 3 outline the major events and trends in AA that impelled Bill to emphasize a particular aspect of AA life. And in a few cases, an introductory sentence or two sets the context for a specific article. Toward the end appear a group of memorial articles written in appreciation for several non-alcoholic friends of AA, as well as for Dr. Bob and for Bill D., AA number 3. And an appendix containing 7 articles in which Bill reflected on the grapevine itself. While the intent is to make available the whole body of Bill's grapevine writings, a few omissions have been made because of length. His series of articles on the traditions written in 1952 and 1953 and later reprinted in the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions is readily accessible in that book and thus is not reprinted here. Similarly, 2 excerpts from AA Comes of Age that were reprinted as Grapevine articles have not been included, and 1 article that appeared twice in the Grapevine appears only once here. All of Bill's very brief, about half a page each, Christmas and Thanksgiving greetings to the fellowship have been cut, with the exception of the December 1970 Christmas message, his last Grapevine piece. And finally, a few brief items, short memorial tributes to the General Service Office staff, and an announcement that the General Service Office was moving to a new location have also been omitted. Since this collection is by its nature an AA historical document, several characteristics should be mentioned. First, repetition. The articles appeared originally in a periodical publication, and Bill could never be sure that any reader had seen a previous one. Thus, he often repeated ideas or illustrations, and those repetitions have been retained to ensure the integrity of Bill's work. Second, some material has been outdated. For example, a few ideas that were articulated in the very early articles about the traditions proved unworkable in the light of later experience, but for the sake of historical accuracy, earlier versions have not been edited. And last, Bill was a man of his time, and some readers may find unfamiliar idioms or terminology, or may be taken aback by phraseology that would be considered inappropriate today. Once again, the original language, with a few changes that necessitated no rewriting, has been retained, because any tampering with phraseology might also have tampered with the meaning. Bill's most quoted description of the grapevine appears in AA Comes of Age. The grapevine is the mirror of AA thought and action worldwide. It is a sort of magic carpet on which all of us can travel from one distant AA outpost to another, and has become a wonderful exchange medium of our current thought and experience. It is the hope of the grapevine editors that Bill W.'s timeless insights written in the 40s, 50s, and 60s will serve as a mirror for AA members in the 80s and beyond, reminding us of what it used to be like, documenting what happened and why it happened, and illuminating the present with the wisdom of AA's experience in its first 30 years. Mm. So that gives us money. That gives us a good idea of what we're up against here as far as all the writings.
Now, I hear at the end there, I hear that old familiar phrase, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today, but said differently.
Yeah, giving it just a little bit more verbiage. But, you know, that's what we do. We share our experience and stories, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think that's how I relate to and identify with the people that we're trying to help. It's very, very important for alcoholics to help other alcoholics. That's one of the first things Bill learned. Before he met Dr. Bob, he had learned that. So that should really always be emphasized. I think it's really important for us to consider the newcomers and how we approach the newcomers and how we share our message with the newcomers, because, you know, for Alcoholics Anonymous to be here tomorrow, I think we need to be making sure it's a safe, welcoming, and recovery-oriented space for the people that are coming in.
I think doing a show like this is so valuable because in many circles, AA circles today, I suspect that we do a real good job of meeting together. We do a real good job of having coffee and talking about our day. Hopefully we do a pretty good job of teaching what is in our basic text, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's so many other pieces to this thing, and the history, the rich history that is within the pages of things like the language of the heart, and some other pieces of literature, oftentimes gets overlooked, don't you think?
Yes, yes. And, you know, something along those same lines is I have become, over the years, I've become a deeper and deeper fan of Bill Wilson's writings. He was a careful writer. He was contemplative. He shared exactly what needed to be shared, exactly when it needed to be shared in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think he completely dedicated his life to Alcoholics Anonymous and understood the value of his writings and the actual documentation of the things that were going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. It became very important for him. Now, I'll be honest with you. You know, I do not get the Grapevine magazine. Over the years, I've just stopped reading it, and I'm not even going to get into the reasons for that. But there were certain authors, there were certain people who put articles in the Grapevine that I've searched out over the years, and they were really influential, impactful members who shared really clear, concise, very valuable and helpful messages. And it's been about 30 years since I've read this book, but I remember when, you know, so it's going to be kind of a new experience for both of us probably.
Yeah.
But I remember just how important, and how interesting it was to hear, you know, Bill Wilson speaking to us from the past, really. Yeah. is what these articles are.
So one of the things I want to ask you, because there seems to be some confusion sometimes when it comes to people that are real sticklers about literature that is passed around the rooms. This particular book, The Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings, is this AA conference-approved literature?
So I'm gonna answer this with my best information. And
okay.
Again, I can always be wrong, but the conference approving literature, there's certain things that they have to go through in the General Service Conference to get approvals for a publication. And a periodical just wouldn't have the time for that to happen. You would be reading 2-year-old articles if they tried to get conference approval.
Right.
For single article.
Yeah.
So there was just a general approval for the Grapevine, and they kind of hoped that the editors of the Grapevine would do a good enough job that the message was clear and solid, solid AA.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good answer. Yeah, because I had somebody already ask me that I was sharing that we were going to do this. Well, I don't know if that's conference approved literature.
You know, I would just answer that as the Grapevine has been granted general approval from the conference to do its publication. So
okay,
to me that's as good as conference approved.
Yeah, gotcha.
All right, so let's jump into part one. What do you say? This is page one, part one.
Yes, sir.
In the summer of 1944, Alcoholics Anonymous was experiencing phenomenal growth. AA's leadership still lay primarily in the hands of its founding members, and from one tiny office in New York City, Bill W. and a few others sought to keep up with a nearly overwhelming surge in membership. The Jack Alexander article published in the Saturday Evening Post in 1941 had caused AA's numbers to grow from 2,000 to 8,000 by the end of that year. By 1950, the membership would swell to more than 96,000, and the number of groups would jump from about 500 in 1944 to 3,500 in 1950. In tandem with this upsurge within the fellowship, many non-alcoholics in medicine, religion, and the media were becoming aware of AA as a solution for seemingly hopeless alcoholics and were clamoring for information and answers about AA's policies. You know, that period of time, it's funny. Jack Alexander was like a scam buster. Okay, he was like a Bob Woodward or something is today.
Yeah.
He would go in and he would interview and he would observe, and then he'd write this scathing article on you know, why these people are frauds. I mean, that's really what he was known for. And he went into Alcoholics Anonymous, Monty, expecting to be able to write an article saying, you know, all these people are crazy, these people are all frauds. But you know what the AAs did? Hmm. They invited him in and they said, just come to our meetings. Just come to our meetings and watch what's going on. And he did that. And prior to him writing the article, he became a, you know, really sold on the facts that these alcoholics have found a way that they can bond together and stay sober. And this is amazing. So he put this article out in the Saturday Evening Post, and that was one of the biggest periodicals of the time. You know, today we've got internet and everything, and, you know, I'm not even sure people get magazines anymore. But back then, you could figure that half the households in America got the Saturday Evening Post. They got the Reader's Digest, they got the Saturday Evening Post, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that article, you can imagine all the families with family members, you know, like Uncle Harry's drinking himself to death. You know, I read this article in Saturday Evening Post, and poor Bill Wilson and Nell Wing and all these people in the office, he had to get AAs to volunteer to answer letters. It was a wild time.
Wow.
It was a wild time. And that's what they're talking about here.
Yeah.
So the flood of letters pouring into AA's small headquarters office, along with the experience gleaned from visits to groups all over North America, clarified for Bill and the other founding members the principles that seemed to enhance group unity, as well as those that often led to conflict. Faced with growth and challenges from within and without, Bill was fully aware that the new fellowship could easily founder under the weight of its own success unless a common body of guiding principles and effective policy for relating to the general public could be formulated. In the articles in Part 1, Bill describes the accumulated experience and suggested for the fellowship's consideration a set of practical guiding principles. These landmark articles reached a climax in the April 1946 issue with 12 suggested points for AA tradition, now the long form of the 12 traditions. So Bill Wilson, you know, once all the letter writing had slowed down a little, he got on the train, and he went to California, he went to Texas. I think he even went to Europe. He wanted to visit these AA groups that were popping up, and they wanted him to visit, right? Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God, Bill Wilson is coming.
Yeah.
So when he got back from that trip, he had seen so many different ways of putting meetings together. You know, there was a guy, David the Dentist, who was one of the great AAs. He did tradition studies that are really valuable if they can be tracked down. But he talked about the early experience, because he was sober in the 60s and 70s, you know, and there was a lot of these stories that were still going around. But people were starting AA groups that were bingo halls. You would play bingo, you know, and it was an AA meeting. And then there was another one where you could drink beer, but you couldn't drink. I mean, there was all kinds of crazy things that were going on. You know, these people aren't allowed, and there's initiation here, and you know, you have to be accepted by five members. I mean, all kinds of crazy rules and regulations. And he kind of formed, he finished forming in his mind the idea that Alcoholics Anonymous has to be open for the sick and suffering alcoholic. And there really shouldn't be any other restrictions on someone being able to come in and get help, you know. And he learned that from just watching and paying attention to how this thing was growing. There was the flying blind period until 1939, and then there was you know, like growing in experience and understanding period of time in AA.
Was there not a time when African-American folks and women, it was not common to see them in AA?
So the oral history, you know, which, you know, I'm going to state right here on the first show that accuracy in details is overrated. You know, Bill Wilson even believed that. You know, there's a lot of things in the big book that never really happened that he talks about that happened.
Yeah, I know.
he was more interested in sharing a deep message. So if he could change a story a little bit to make the message a little deeper, you know, he would. And again, I kind of do that a little too. So like a real AA historian would probably be horrified by some of the perspectives that I have on early AA. But what I heard from the oral tradition was basically this: that Florence Rankin was the first woman that showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they did not let her in the room. There was bouncers at AA meetings. I mean, somebody who knows who would wander in, right? A lot of these meetings were happening in the heart of the city. So she actually gained membership by punching the bouncer as hard as she could right in the face. And that was the beginning of women membership in Alcoholics Anonymous.
I love it.
Now, you know, there's a more ugly history of what blacks had to deal with gaining membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't really know enough about it to really share on it. There was this guy Franklin W. from Olive Branch, Mississippi, he was the first black guy in his area in AA, and he went through, you know, he went through some real trials and tribulations. But to end on a good note, you know, there is but one requirement today for membership,
right?
Especially after these traditions were published, and that is a desire to stop drinking. Sometimes they'll say an honest desire to stop drinking, and in some of the writings, if a person means business is also used.
So, right.
Mm-hmm. So that's a long answer to a short question.
Sure. Sure. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we're on segment one, Monty.
Yep.
The shaping of the traditions. Now, just basically, you know, my view of the traditions today. I believe that they can be seen as best practices. So we have learned a lot over the years because we've operated a lot of groups. We have millions of people's experience today. And we kind of understand like what works and what doesn't work. And Bill had it right, you know, from the beginning. I have no real argument with any of these traditions looking at them, you know, 60 years after he wrote them. But he understood that for us to survive, the unity of the group must be sound and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, his experience seeing all these groups and seeing them do it wrong. And there was one AA group where the cops broke in and arrested them all because they were gambling. And everybody's picture was in the paper, you know, Harry so-and-so alcoholic, you know, arrested for gambling. And, there was just a million experiences like that. You know how crazy we are.
Yeah.
You know? All kinds of stuff can happen. So he really believed in a deep way that the integrity of the message of recovery must be made safe within a fellowship. So he started these Grapevine articles, which ended up being changed around a little and put in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. But they first appeared in the Grapevine, and we're actually going to get a look at the first drafts of these things, I think.
That's great.
All right, so segment one, the shaping of the traditions. Modesty, one plank for good public relations. This was written in August 1945. During its brief few years in the public eye, Alcoholics Anonymous has received hundreds of thousands of words of newspaper and magazine publicity. These channels have been augmented recently by radio commentators and here and there AA-sponsored radio broadcasts. Hardly a word of criticism or ridicule has ever been uttered about us. While our publicity has sometimes lacked a certain dignity, we can scarcely complain of that. After all, drinking is not such a dignified business. We surely have reason for great gratitude that multitudes of writers, editors, clergy, doctors, friends of every description have continued so sympathetically and so enthusiastically to urge our cause. As a direct result of their efforts, thousands of alcoholics have come to AA. It is a good record, providentially good, when one considers how many mistakes we might have made, how deeply, had other policies been followed, we might not have evolved. In the wet-dry controversy, for example, conceivably, we might even have fallen out with our good friends, religion and medicine. None of these things have happened. We have been unbelievably fortunate, thank God. While this makes fine success story reading, it is not, to our way of thinking, any reason for self-congratulations. Older AAs, can you imagine they had older AAs in 1945?
Wow.
Older AAs who know the record are unanimous in their feelings that an intelligence greater than ours has surely been at work, else we could never have avoided so many pitfalls, could never have been so happily related to our millions of friends in the outside world. An intelligence greater than ours.
There it is.
You know, you look at the steps and you look at the traditions, and in the heart of the steps and in the heart of the traditions is God.
Yeah.
Is connection with the divine, Monty. Haven't you seen that?
Absolutely. And it baffles me that there are some that would like to just scrape over the top of that. I just baffles me because it's so evident. You know, the thing about, well, that's the spiritual part of the program. The whole program is spiritual, right?
What the 12 steps are, there's their personal pathway to connection with the divine.
Yeah.
That's what they are. And it's that connection with the divine that transforms us, that gives us a personality change of depth. The moral psychology, there's many ways they describe it in the book, but it awakens something in us that has been rendered unconscious by alcohol or drugs.
Sure, you bet.
Okay, yet history records the rise and, let us not forget, the fall of any number of promising and benign undertakings, political, religious, and social. While some did outlive their usefulness, the greater part died prematurely. Something wrong or unsound within them always became apparent without. Their public relations suffered. They grew no more. They bogged down to a dead level or fell apart. See, he had been exposed to the Washingtonians. The Washingtonians were a group of people in the mid-1800s who banded together to stay sober, to help each other stay sober. And within 4 years, there were hundreds of thousands of members.
Mm-hmm.
And within another 4 years, they were all gone because they got involved in things like worthwhile things, like the abolition of slavery, some non-worthwhile things like prohibition on alcohol. So they lost their focus. They lost their primary purpose. They lost sight of that which they were there for in the first place. And so Bill knew that. By the time he was writing the traditions, he had been told and studied something about the Washingtonians, and he knew that there was risk involved in these fellowships. They could die very quickly if they make really, really big mistakes. And right away he knew that it was dangerous for anyone to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, anyone to be seen as a leader of, or the president or CEO of, because we're all fallible people. Mm. And the unity of the fellowship needs to be preserved at all costs. So this is kind of what he's talking about here, how members could screw it up, and how the fellowship needs to be protected from the membership itself.
You know, Chris, it appears, you know, and maybe it's just my cynicism, but it appears to me that history is repeating itself somewhat within Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, sometimes I sit back and I think, we really need to read this material, because we're making a lot of the same mistakes that Bill was trying to avoid.
You know, I see the demise of Alcoholics Anonymous, God help us if that comes to fruition, as coming from inside and not necessarily from outside.
I agree.
So, yeah. So personal glorification, overweening pride, consuming ambition, exhibitionism, intolerant smugness, money or power madness, refusal to admit mistakes and learn from them, self-satisfaction, lazy complacency, these and many more are the garden variety of ills which so often beset movements as well as individuals.
Wow.
That's true.
Well, that reads like the first chapter in the book of Romans. I mean, you know, slanderers, haters, disrespecters. I'm like, whoa, yeah.
While we AAs as individuals have suffered much from just such defects and must daily admit and deal with them in our personal lives if we are to stay sober and useful, it is nevertheless true that such attitudes have seldom crept into our public relations. But sometimes they might. Let us never say it can't happen here. Now, I'm gonna just point out something here. So he just talked about a bunch of character defects in the preceding paragraph. And then he said, we must daily admit and deal with them in our personal lives if we're to stay sober and useful. Now, I see that in everything from, you know, step 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, where really what we're doing is these character defects that are born out of our self, you know, self-imposed crisis, selfish and self-centeredness, various manifestations of self which have defeated us. You know, he was always clear that we've met the enemy, and the enemy is us. And on a daily basis we need to be accountable for these defects of character. And he's even stating it here in this first Grapevine article.
And so the emphasis here is to take care of, be aware of, and allow God to work in our lives to address these defects of character. The substance, alcohol, is really not the issue.
You know, it's not. We have more of a sobriety problem than we have a drinking problem.
Yeah.
Because we can't stay sober very long, as untreated alcoholics. So he went deep into that that issue, and I think he hit the nail on the head when he identified the various selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking type of character defects that are driven by fear and resentment as what our real problem is. And I think this is really why the 12 steps have been so successful and have transformed into 200 or 300 other 12-step fellowships, because they work so well at changing the person at depth that they become released from a lot of these things. You know, some of these character defects, you know as well as I do, Monty, they're going to hang on and we're going to fight with them maybe the rest of our lives.
Sure.
But for the most part, we're fundamentally changed. We're fundamentally changed, and we're released from our drinking. We're released from these sprees and these brainstorms that he would talk about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, amen.
Those who read the July grapevine were startled, then sobered by the account which it carried of the Washingtonian movement. Here we go. It was hard for us to believe that 100 years ago, the newspapers of this country were carrying enthusiastic accounts about 100,000 alcoholics who were helping each other stay sober. That today, the influence of this good work has so completely disappeared that few of us have ever heard of it. Let's cast our eyes over the grapevine piece about the Washingtonians and excerpts excerpt a few sentences. Mass meeting in 1841 at City Hill Park, New York City, attracted 4,000 listeners. Speakers stood on upturned rum kegs. Triumphal parades in Boston. Historic Faneuil Hall jammed. Overdone self-advertising, exhibitionism. Anyhow, it sounds very alcoholic, doesn't it? Politicians look hungrily at the swelling membership, helped wreck local groups through their effort to line up votes. Look like personal ambition again, also unnecessary group participation in controversial issues. The hot political issue was the abolition of slavery. The Washingtonians were confident. They scorned old methods, too cocksure maybe, couldn't learn from others and became competitive instead of cooperative with other organizations in their field. You know, they became competitive as far as, you know, national speaking. You know, they had a speaker circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, one speaker was, you know, insulting another one, trying to be the big speaker. Unfortunately, there's a little of that left over.
Yeah, there is.
I can tell you from personal experience. Anyway, like AA, the Washingtonians originally had but one object, was concerned only with the reclamation of drunkards, and held that it was none of its affair if others used alcohol who seemed little harmed by it. But later on came this development. There was a division among the older local organizations. Some wanted wines and beers. Some clamored for legislation to outlaw alcohol. In its zeal for new members, many intemperate drinkers, not necessarily alcoholic, were pledged. The original strong and simple group purpose was thus dissipated in fruitless controversy and divergent aims. So singleness of purpose is something that you're going to hear a lot of, you know, from the real experienced AA members today.
Yes, you will.
Singleness of purpose. Let's keep this thing focused on where it needs to be focused. And again, some of the Washingtonian local groups dipped into their treasuries to finance their own publications. There was no overall editorial policy. Editors of local papers got into squabbles with editors of temperance papers. Apparently, the difficulty was not necessarily the fact that they had local publications. It was more the refusal of the Washingtonians to stick to their original purpose and so refrain from fighting anybody. Also, the obvious fact that they had no national public relations policy or tradition, which all members were willing to follow. So, thank God, you know, Bill was a visionary. I will say this. Bill worked on problems that we hadn't even had yet. Bill shared about things that were going to go on in AA that hadn't even transpired yet. You know, and his foresight certainly led to a bunch of principles, a bunch of best practices, a bunch of traditions that have helped us stay sound. You know, it's helped us stay sound, and it's one of the first things, you know, an AA member learns when they go into AA. They're not going to be president of it. They're not going to control it. You know,
right?
They only have the one vote, and that's a good lesson in humility.
And yet, there was a whole handful of folks that were totally against this tradition thing. True.
Yeah, you know, Akron especially, you know, Akron always, like, raised their eyebrows to what was going on in New York. You know, they always saw Bill Wilson as a big promoter and is always going to make money, you know. And when the traditions were written, what Bill really had to do was he had to stump the country. He had to go around the country, you know, speaking to as many groups as he could, telling them that we needed this. And I believe they passed unanimously at the 1950 convention. I believe that's right. But that never would have happened without him personally bespeeching people to vote for these things.
Yeah.
Many of them didn't understand that we got along fine, Bill, without all this stuff. You don't see what I see. You know, I've gone to 500 meetings, 500 groups, and you don't see what I see. You know, we need this.
Yeah, and you bet.
I think he was right. We are sure that if the original Washingtonians could return to this planet, they would be glad to see us learning from their mistakes. They would not regard our observations as aimless criticism. Had we lived in their day, we might have made some the same errors. Perhaps we are beginning to make some of them now. So we need to constantly scrutinize ourselves carefully in order to make everlastingly certain that we shall always be strong enough and single-purposed enough from within to relate ourselves rightly to the world without. Now then, does AA have a public relations policy? Is it good enough? Are its main principles clear? Can it meet changing conditions over the years to come? Now that we are growing so rapidly into public view, many AAs are becoming acutely conscious of these questions. In the September Grapevine, I'll try to briefly outline what our present public relation practices are, how they developed, and where, in the judgment of most older AA members, they could perhaps be improved to better cope with our new and more pressing problems. May we always be willing to learn from our experience. So there's a real historical perspective from that. You know, AA was 10 years old, Monty, when he wrote that. You know?
Yeah.
Like how long have you been sober?
Be 25 years in September.
All right, I've got 32, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I would have the wherewithal to put together the structure of something that I've been experiencing for 33 years.
Sure.
You really got to hand it to him. He was dedicated and purposeful with all of this.
You know, it amazes me because the home group that I attended for many, many, many years that was so instrumental in helping me launch forth into this whole recovery thing, it was founded years before the traditions were written, and I've seen it go through some pretty horrendous struggles, and yet it's still there. It still functions. The doors still stay open, even through. I mean, they had their struggles through the pandemic and so forth, but they bounced back. But it blows my mind. You know what that is? I got to say it. That's proof again that God has not left Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, I believe I believe that's true. Certainly these are guiding principles and they're spiritual principles. But underlying the totality of this whole thing is a miraculous interventionary force, and you cannot stay involved in this recovery thing for very long without starting to recognize that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I sure do. You can't deny it. You really can't. I mean, yeah. It's all around you, and to watch and see people's lives transform as they do, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but you really, listeners, you don't want to miss it. You just don't want to miss it. If you're frustrated, I get it. My sponsor told me I was whining and complaining about, oh, this meeting's toxic and I'm just not getting anything out of it anymore and blah, blah, blah. And he just started laughing. He had this way of this big belly laugh that he had. And he said, you silly alcoholic. He says, you're not here to get fed. You're here to be of maximum service to God and the people in the rooms. And it was like, oh.
I love the way Bill puts it in and how it works. He says there are people who cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program. Mm. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. Now, isn't that really non-judgmental? Like, some people cannot and some people will not give themselves to this.
Yeah.
Yet there are people who dive in, you know, they come all the way in, they sit all the way down, you know, what do you want me to do next? You know, give me some work to do. So I think part of the divine experience is a sense of enthusiasm when it comes to this.
Sure.
You know, we come here because we have to, then we come here because we need to, then we come here because we want to, then we come here because we like to, and then we come here because we love to.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully you're that type of a member, and you're not somebody who's gonna, you know, who's gonna drift away.
Yeah.
Because this is a way. It's a way of life. It's not an acute treatment. It's a chronic treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you don't go to a 12-step program for a year and you're better, and then you can quit going to the 12-step program. If you've become what they describe as an alcoholic or a drug addict, this needs to become a way of life, you know, and it's become a great way of life for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, we are out of time. Next week, we'll pick it up with rules, dangerous, but unity vital.
You know, Monty, it's an absolute pleasure being back with you. It's like no time has passed at all.
I know. It's great. I love it. And that's what the Fellowship of the Spirit does for you. You know, folks, you just don't want to miss it. You really, really don't. Chris, thank you so much. We will talk to you again next week. Listeners, here's the deal. This is going to have a dedicated webpage. Very simple. If you want to keep up on it, visit us at take12radio.com. Click on the Recovery Workshops link, and there we'll be walking through the language of the heart. And each Friday, there'll be a new episode posted until we move all the way through this thing and continue with our good friend, Chris S., as we come together and share our experience, strength, and hope, and some real vital history and material that really will enhance your recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Monty. We'll see you next week.
All right. Friends, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof.